from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. California is getting older. In fact, the median age for state residents is now higher than it's ever been before. There are now 4 million Californians in the 55 to 64 age range. That's 50% more than just 10 years ago. Are we ready for what some are calling the silver tsunami? What sorts of challenges do cities and neighborhoods face? Are the transportation, housing, and healthcare systems in place to contend with our ever-aging population? In the hour ahead, we continue our series, Our Changing Communities, as we focus on the graying of the Golden State. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. If Californians were able to look into a collective mirror, they'd see a reflected image that was graying around the edges. We're getting older. The oldest baby boomers have now achieved senior status, and millions more will reach that milestone in the years ahead. In San Francisco, a city that likes to promote a youthful image, the city population is actually now older than the statewide average. In Sacramento, during the past decade, the number of elderly residents grew three times faster than the number of children. And down the road on the peninsula in the San Mateo County area, the percentage of adults over the age of 85 is expected to grow by nearly 150% over the next 20 years. As part of our series on the 2010 census, Our Changing Communities, we want to explore this morning these particular changes and challenges and what these demographics suggest, from housing to healthcare. Are we ready for the graying of the Golden State? Joining us this morning to talk about that, Annie Chung. She's president and CEO of Self-Help for the Elderly, a community organization serving 35,000 seniors in San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Clara, and Alameda counties. Annie Chung, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us, too, is Gail Geary. She is the board president and a member and one of the founders of San Francisco Village, which is a community-based membership organization that helps adults stay in their homes as they age. Gail Geary, good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us by telephone this morning, Andrew Sharlock. He is the director of the Center for the Advanced Study of Aging Services and professor of aging at the University of California, Berkeley School of Social Welfare. Mr. Sharlock, thanks for joining us as well.
Good morning, Dave. Great to be with you.
Happy to have all of you join us. I want to start by asking whether or not, Gail Geary, this demographic change is different. I mean, demographics always change. Ethnicities change. The number of people from a particular race in a certain city changes, goes up and down. We've seen that, of course, in the Bay Area. So demographic change is ongoing. But is there something particularly important about this shift to the graying of California that will have a widespread societal impact?
Definitely. And I think one of the things people should keep in mind is that even though the population is getting older, this is a population that has contributed to many, many social issues earlier on in the 60s and 70s. So for a number of people, this is a time where they actually get to do what they want to do. Now, San Francisco Village serves a group of people who are active and engaged. I think Annie is serving a group of people who are still active and engaged, but probably don't have the same kind of resources. We know that the population is getting older. San Francisco is the oldest city in all of the U.S., and we really believe that we can, as a group, working together, we can make this a better city, an aging-friendly city, and that's what we're dedicated to doing.
Andrew Sharlock, do you think there is awareness of that and of the specific sorts of societal consequence that this change portends?
Unfortunately, no, although the awareness is growing as we in our own lives encounter our own signs of aging and the aging of our parents and loved ones increasingly. But if you look at the way we live our lives and the choices we make, where we choose to live, very few of us make choices based on whether what we're doing will be good for us down the road in 20 or 30 years. And most of the decisions that we make as communities are not based on whether it will be good for a aging society, whether it's how we design our bridges or our buildings or our transportation systems.
So walk us through a couple of examples, Andrew Sharlock, that you'd like to see us think about more, starting with the personal part of this. I mean, what should we be thinking about? Let's say people, aging boomers, if we want to take that population group, the group that now will grow by a rate has grown by a rate of 50% in the state of California. What should people in that age range be thinking about that perhaps they're not?
Well, the first question is a very simple one. When we think about aging-friendly lives or aging-friendly communities, it's very simply, are we able to live somewhere that meets our needs and our wants, and are we able to get to places that meet our needs and our wants? It seems like a very simple question, but I just would ask our listeners to look around themselves and ask 20 or 30 or however many years hence, would they be able to continue to stay where they are right now and get to where they want to go? If you live in San Francisco, it often involves stairs, there's ways to modify buildings. There's ways to put in railings. There's ways to put in little benches and seats and places so that you can rest on the way up and down stairs. There's some of us who have stacked closets where you can put in an elevator. And if you live outside of San Francisco, it's much more a question of can you get somewhere without getting behind the wheel of a car?
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk to where you want to go? Can you take a golf cart or an electric wheelchair or electric scooter to get to where you want to go? If the answer is no, then you're likely to have a problem as you get older.
Annie Cheng, what are you seeing in your work at the Self-Help for the Elderly organization that people aren't thinking about that they really need to be?
I think for about 45 years, our agency has been really targeting the elderly population, particularly those, as Gail said, that doesn't have a lot of resources. So any of our housing, like affordable housing project, have literally thousands of elderly on the waiting list, waiting to come into these livable, viable, and safe housing that they also could pay affordable rent. So we're seeing housing as a very top priority, that people want to really stay in their own communities, in their own familiar surroundings. But as our population gets older, we also see a demand, increasing demand for like home delivered meals services to the homebound. Our home care and hospice program has been increasing, and they also need residential care, which is a 24-hour supervision and care. So we've been growing those frail services along the continuum rapidly.
And yet, of course, we're also in this time of profound economic anxiety and a time when government services are being cut back. It wasn't long ago, within the last month or two, that there were big cutbacks, for example, in adult day services here in the state of California. It was cut out of the budget entirely. There was an attempt to restore it. The governor vetoed it. What are the consequences, Andrew Sharlock, of not having those kinds of services at the precise time when the need for those services is accelerating?
You know, there is growing evidence that services that are provided early, when people are first beginning to need help, have a tremendous payoff down the road in terms of helping people to age in place, helping people to avoid having to move to a higher level of care, whether it's assisted living or nursing home. So when we don't provide the kind of community-based services, we increase the level of unmet needs. I've recently come back from a month in Sweden and Denmark. In Sweden, if you're elderly and disabled, your chance of having unmet needs is less than 5%. In the U.S., if you're elderly and disabled, your chance of having unmet needs is 1 in 3. A third of our older adults with disabilities have significant unmet needs for care. So these kinds of services that really help us to continue to age in place. If we don't have those, it puts more burden on family members, but more importantly, it increases the likelihood that people will not get their needs met. And from a societal point of view, it takes people who have much to give, much to offer, who can be resources to their communities, to younger people in their communities, who can be volunteers, and it makes them prisoners of their own homes and removes them from the ability to be a social resource.
And it also sounds like it might be a bit of penny wise, pound foolish, that we're saving some money now by eliminating those services, but if you wind up then having more people land in the ER or wind up in long-term housing situations, that in the end, that'll cost us more. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's talk about some steps that can be done in this challenging time. And why don't you describe for us, if you would, Gilgiri, the San Francisco Village model? Because while there have been other examples of this around the country over the last 10 years or so, I'm not sure how fully understood it is. So describe your model and what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Our vision is to enable people to stay in their own homes for as long as possible. We want people, and we know from our members that they want to be active, engaged, and have the resources, have a sense of security that they can stay in their own homes and get what they need. We are building our village on a volunteer-first basis. We realize that volunteers are critical, and not just volunteers who are members, but we want to pull in volunteers who are all ages. Part of staying in our own homes is the fact that we want to remain in a multi-generational society.
So tell me how it works. People who are members of San Francisco Village pay a certain amount. For that, they get what and how volunteers then play into that?
So people do join. We are a 501c3 organization. Single-family households pay $50 a month to belong. Couples pay $62.50. They join. They fill out an intake questionnaire. We get to know them. We know what their specific needs are. And then we work with them to being able to fulfill the needs. We have activities. We have member-only meetings where people come together. Actually, at San Francisco Village, the members themselves have generated activities like a play reading group, a book club, a lunch bunch where they're exploring restaurants all around the city. But people in the village want to form intimate, meaningful relationships with each other, and we provide the ability. Now, that's on the active side. We also have members at different times in their lives who are going into the hospital for operations. They might fall unexpectedly. They may have crises that are one-time or continuing crises, and they can phone us. We have one phone number where people phone.
So this is one-stop shopping.
Whether
your toilet is overflowing or you've fallen, excuse me, or whatever your need happens to be, they can call San Francisco Village and you'll figure out a way to provide that service?
Absolutely. We have 125 vetted service providers. We're also strategic partners with the Institute on Aging, with the Institute on Health and Healing, Jewish Family and Children's Services. We're not reinventing the wheel. We want to provide the best of the best for our members.
Gilgiri, board president, member, and one of the founders of the San Francisco Village organization. Annie Chung, for people who can't afford $62.50 a month,
yes,
modest as that may seem, there are a lot of people that adds up to $700 or more a year who can't do that. And I suspect that that's true of many of your clients.
Yes. Our target population are all on fixed income, many of them on SSI income of around like $900+ a month. So for services, we really have to look to existing public-funded programs like in-home support services or the Medicare reimbursed home care or hospice. You just mentioned the adult day health care that the governor had vetoed and wanted to eliminate in 5-6 months. That's paid for by Medicare. But if those services were all taken away, then I think that the state's going to have to spend probably 5 to 8 times more if these very frail elderly have to go into a nursing home. And the state still have to pick up you know, for the cost of their care.
Are you seeing differences between the population that you've traditionally served, people now perhaps in their 70s and 80s, and the sort of young old, the people who are aging boomers, people in their, say, mid-60s?
Right.
Different needs, different demands. How are those populations
different? Totally different. And I think that our frontline staff are finding it a bit of a challenge to try to integrate both population under the same senior center because space is limited, resources are limited. But yet I feel a kind of an exciting time because from the young elderly, the baby boomers that are becoming 60, 65 and older, they bring with them kind of a new energy. You know, they want more wellness programs, they want more empowerment programs, and I think that they also could be our volunteers. Like Gail said, all the nonprofit here rely so heavily on our volunteers. So I think that they could bring to us some things that our traditional elderly, like in the 80s and 90s, would not be able to provide.
Are they also more demanding? Are they more of a pain in the neck?
Not so much a pain, but more demand in the sense that they want more options. Like, for example, in our 10 senior centers and meal sites in San Francisco, we offer one menu. But I think that for the boomers, they really look to meal sites that could offer a number of choices for them. So we're slowly, gradually trying to see if we could add another choice. If they don't want rice, can we offer a salad instead? Things like that.
Probably want salad, vegan options, all those
yes.
sorts of things. As a member of that generation, I understand what you're probably contending with. Annie Chung, President and CEO of Self Help for the Elderly. We're going to open up our phone lines early today. If you are someone who is approaching this age range or someone who is already there, we're interested in what concerns you have about growing old in the Golden State, whether or not this state will provide the kind of services that are necessary, what kinds of things you think are important as you grow older. We'd also like to hear from our younger listeners. If you're contending with this issue, perhaps with a parent, or you're on the side of the age equation where you're not so sure that the entitlement benefits that today's senior citizens receive will be there for you, how you view this changing demographic and changing population. Here's the number if you want to join our conversation. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your emailed question here. There's a question that came in earlier, Gail, about your comment about San Francisco being the oldest city in the country. That's hard to believe. Is San Francisco really the oldest population in the country? Where what happens with all these people? Do they all stay home 24/7?
So the statistics say right now 19% of our population is 60 plus. They expect it to be 26% in 2020. This is older than any other city in California, but the business San Francisco Business Times said that we were the oldest metropolis. And people do, 90% of people do want to stay in their own homes. But when people think of that, it's not that they want to remain in their homes all the time. They want to be out living their lives as they have as younger people. And I think there's a misperception that as we get older, our life gets more narrow. What I've experienced is that people's lives either get broader, people can now take on new interests, or they reach out and try to do things they've never been able to do before. A number of people become artists, follow that instinct that they had as a child to do art.
When did you start thinking about this change in your life, and what was important to you to try to figure out early on?
I started thinking about this when I was in my 30s. Both my parents had died, and I was with my mother when she died of cancer, and she was determined to stay in her own home at that time. And her fierce determination and my sister's and my ability to be able to be with her in the last 4 months of her life started that interest for me. When I retired from business, I was a partner in an ad agency in San Francisco. There was an article in the New York Times by Jane Gross talking about Beacon Hill Village. That was it. I decided at that moment that was what I wanted to do. And with full support of my husband, we decided to get involved in the village movement.
Beacon Hill Village was the sort of pioneer in this around the famous Beacon Hill neighborhood in Boston. Again, this idea of people sort of relying on each other, joining a membership organization, and this idea of having a number you can call that can help solve a variety of problems. How important would you say, Andrew Sharlack, that approach is? Do you see the Beacon Hill, or in this case, the San Francisco Village model, as being something that can be replicated and provide key services? Can it apply to lower income areas as well as not just well-to-do areas like Beacon Hill in Boston?
Dave, you know, we're doing national studies now of this village model and some similar models. There are about 60 of these that are up and running nationwide, about 15 of them in the state of California, another 150 or so in development. I think it's a very interesting, exciting model, but I'm struck by the two polarities here. The one image of, as we get older, being very energetic, having a lot of physical ability and a lot of resources, personal. And the other, an image of us as we get older, being quite frail, quite needy, having very few resources. And those are both very important images, but for most of us, we are a combination. We have energy, we have much to give, much to offer, and we also need a little bit of help and some accommodation and some support. So my long-winded way of saying that I think a combination is the future. And just as Annie Chung was saying that self-help for the elderly is seeing some of their younger clients who now want to be more involved and want more choice, the kind of choices, the kind of involvement that San Francisco Village embodies, but they also need some support. And it's this mixture of what the community can do, what the government can do, and what we as individuals can do, that really, I think, is where the future lies. Having us being much more engaged, much more involved in our own lives, and in the lives of our community, and at the same time, having supports when we need them.
Let's take a quick call, and then we'll go to our break and pick up with our calls on the other side. But Peter, get us started, please, with a first quick question, if you would.
Well, one of the issues that I am concerned about is I, at one point, had a brief stroke. I started looking for answers. And there's a lot of electronic equipment that is out there, such as a PERS or personal emergency response system. The only thing is this stuff is not covered by insurance companies. Mm. And it should be, because it will cost the insurer far less money to simply have a monitoring system in someone's home or some of this equipment. And it allows you to live in your home, to communicate effectively with your doctors, and get electrical cardiograms or equipment that take your results of your cardiogram and blood pressure and everything else. And yeah. But it's not covered by the insurance.
Peter, you're breaking up a little, but we got the gist of your question. Andrew Sharlack, just a brief response. We have to go to our break, but it sounds like there are some really promising technologies that, again, in this case, could be both penny-wise and pound-wise.
Yes, we're studying them at Berkeley. There's wonderful technologies. I will tell you, the United States is falling farther and farther behind Europe and Asia in this regard, and we really need government leadership to help provide incentives and education so people will know how to obtain these and how to use them properly. They can be tremendous.
We'll pick up on that when we return and get more answers to your questions. We'll talk about some additional things that could be done that could be helpful, as Peter was suggesting, and other ideas for how people can stay and be thriving in their own homes as they age. We'll pick up on that when we return. Here's the number to join our conversation, 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
You're
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic today, the graying of the Golden State. Demographics suggest, the 2010 census suggests, that we are getting older in the San Francisco Bay Area and around the state. The question is, are we ready for that as a society, as families, as a culture? And what is it that we need to do to prepare for those changes? Here are the numbers if you want to join our conversation. 866-733-6786 is the phone. Email forum at kqed.org. Website kqed.org/forum. Your comments there. Before we take our next call, Andrew Sharlock, you were just touching on Peter's good question about the sort of low-cost technologies that are available that can make a difference in terms of people who are contending with different physical disabilities. Just take that a beat further, if you would, the kinds of things that are available and perhaps what we need to do more. You were saying that we're slipping behind what other countries are achieving.
So just a couple of examples, and these are all things that are currently available with current technology. In Japan, for example, tremendous investments and understanding of something as mundane as what do we do when we go into the bathroom? How do we take baths? How do we take showers? How do we use the toilet? And how do you then design the environment so it really responds to people's needs without having to bend over, which is one of the biggest problems and one of the biggest vulnerabilities for falls. Creating sensors that sense when you've fallen, or even better, something that you wear it's a little tiny thing that you wear that you don't even know you're wearing that senses when you're about to fall. Or we have OnStar in some of our cars where when the car has a problem, you don't even know it. There's a transmission and somebody comes on and says, "I see you're having a problem." We don't have those for ourselves, for our environments, and for our bodies. And yet, with the same technology, we could. So there's so much that can be done, and that we have existing technology to do, but it's just not widely available.
Andrew Sharlock is the director of the Center for the Advanced Study of Aging Services and a professor of aging at the University of California, Berkeley School of Social Welfare. Lots of people are calling in. Our producer, Kevin Guillory, tells me wanting to know how to reach all of you. So let's do a round of phone numbers and web addresses. We can also get them on the forum website. But Gail Geary, if people want to find out more about San Francisco Village, they should
call our office, which is 387-1375, area code 415. And I'm happy to talk to anybody personally at 415-699-3158.
So the number for San Francisco Village, again, area 415-387-1375, 387-1375 in the 415 area code. And we'll get these numbers on the forum website, too, if you don't have a pen handy. Annie Chung, what about self-help for the elderly?
You could reach self-help at 415-677-7600.
So that's 415-677-7660.
7600.
I'm sorry, 7600. So again, 415-677-7600 for self-help for the elderly. And for the Center on Advanced Study of Aging Services, Andrew Sharlock, if people are interested in sort of learning more about all these various, even some of the devices you were talking about, can your center be a resource for that? Or where would you point people who want to learn more about those sorts of possibilities?
Yeah, they're welcome to email us at the center, and if you just do a search of Center for the Advanced Study of Aging Services, you'll get that, and we have reports that are online, and we can put people in touch with. My personal email is just my last name, Sharlack, Scharlach, at berkeley.edu. And I'm happy to talk to people about some of these resources and put them in touch.
Terrific. Again, Sharlack, Scharlach, at berkeley.edu. All right, back to our callers with that bit of information. Tina in San Francisco is next. Tina, go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. I found this show really interesting. I didn't realize San Francisco was aging so much, and I wondered about the movement to put bike lanes all over the city when the population is aging at this rate.
It's a great question, Tina. Thank you. Gail Geary, you have a response?
Yes. I think bike lanes are essential, really. Just as much as our population is aging, it also is a very young population. So I think, and also older adults do ride bikes all over the place. So I think they're important, and I'm glad they're there.
But it does raise an interesting question, Andrew Sharlock, because one little report I read said you can make a real difference in terms of accidents with pedestrians being struck in intersections, elderly being struck in intersections, if you just increase the amount of time that that walk light blinks. So while bike lanes obviously are a good thing, there are some sort of simple things that we might really think about, right?
Yes, unfortunately, for many years, San Francisco had the dubious distinction of having the highest rate of pedestrian fatalities in the country. It's gotten better. The San Francisco Planning Department has done a great job, and they've experimented with crossing signals that even sense whether there's a pedestrian in the crosswalk. Ultimately, there's some choices to be made, whether our streets are for the convenience of automobiles or whether they're for the convenience of pedestrians or bicyclists, and how to balance those needs. What many cities the size of San Francisco have done have created some streets where preference is given to automobiles and other streets that where it's more balanced, so that if you're on your way through, you have a one-way street and you have timed signals, and whereas on other streets, the priority is given to pedestrian crossing or to slow-moving vehicles, such as bicycles, such as electric wheelchairs, such as golf carts, the whole variety of vehicles that both young people and old people might use.
Here's a question, Annie Chung, that perhaps you can take. Susan writes in, please ask about safety. It's well and good to have public transportation and wheelchair ramps, but not if older citizens are targets of crime. As a mid-50s woman who has lived in San Francisco my entire adult life, I look at older women riding buses, carrying groceries, and my heart breaks. If San Francisco were a safe place, I'd stay here forever. But I will leave when I retire to a safer community.
Unfortunately, that is the perception, that San Francisco is not as safe as it can be, because our elderly do not like to come out after, say, 6, 7 o'clock. Even 6 o'clock is as late as sometimes our meetings should be held, or else they'll be really scared. So I think that a lot of communities try to work with our local police station so that we could do some more safety forums and workshops. So as part of the Asian Pacific Islander Police Forum, we're going to come up with a safety awareness workshop for Chinatown, and we're going to make sure all the immigrant families as well as the elderly are invited to go to learn about Muni safety and how to make better 911 calls.
The question of safety also brings up something else that we were talking about a little bit during the station break a moment ago, and that's the importance as we age of younger people being engaged with those who are aging, that adult children stay engaged with their older relatives. I would think, Annie Chung, that that's something that would be important to safety and any number of other items.
Definitely. I think it involves the whole family, extended family members, to really help to support an aging parent or grandparent. And I think that's for the Chinese culture, we've been practicing that for thousands of years, and it really works because no one could replace family. But in America, when sometimes adult children live so far away from their aging parents or grandparents, they have to rely on more local resources to replace what they can do. But in our community, a lot of elderly would really like to move closer back to their adult children when they age.
Is that something, Gail Geary, that you see the San Francisco Village as in a way replicating those sort of, if not familial connections, at least community connections where people do feel like they have someone they can count on?
That's our goal. I think it's extremely important that people have a connection, and if their families are not nearby, and a number of our members have families that live far away, that they have friends, that they can develop relationships and have the resources that are right at their fingertips. And that's what we're trying to create. I think the most important thing about villages is that we are developing a different kind of community.
Here's an email from Tim in San Francisco who writes in, I'm a 30-year-old Californian who is quite fed up with the irresponsibility of the boomer generation. The boomers think they can treat Social Security as a retirement when really it was created as a lifeline. Politicians refuse to raise retirement ages or adjust benefits for those 55 and older, but are more than willing to fund the elderly on the backs of the youth. This is the proof that the elderly, by and large, never save for their retirement, and they're now passing the bill on to mine and to younger generations. You can hear, Andrew Sharlock, some of Tim's real angst about that, and it's an understandable one, that people of his generation are going to not only have to worry about saving for their own retirement, but sort of footing the bill for boomers who perhaps have not been as wise in their savings as they might have been.
You know, it's a real concern. We in this country have very low savings rates across the board. And unfortunately, I'm afraid in Tim's age cohort, they're even worse than in his parents' cohort. People don't save for all kinds of reasons. For better or for worse, we're all in this together. The 30-year-olds will, in fact, become the 60-year-olds and the 80-year-olds. And we who are older have a vested stake not only in ourselves, but in the well-being of future cohorts of older adults as well. So we really need together to figure this out and to solve these problems. It's not so much a question of one age group versus another. It's a question of how we together prepare our societies for all of us getting older as time goes on.
And we'd still like to hear your concerns about this topic. We have time to get in more calls. We'll get to more calls and emails in a moment. But if you'd like to join us, 866-733-6786. If you have concerns, like Tim, about being a younger person in an aging state, give us a call. If you are someone who is in an older age group at this time and you're worried about how you're going to be able to sustain your own life and independence, give us a call as well, 866-733-6786. Email is forum@kqed.org. To David next. David, go ahead, please, with your question.
Hi. I just wanted to add a comment in contrast to Tim. You know, I think that the people on the show, you know, their contributions and their research are great for improving the lives of the elderly on the margin, particularly in affluent cities like San Francisco. But the best way that people, I think, can work to improve the lives of the elderly is advocate strongly and call their congressman about supporting Social Security and Medicare. You know, these cornerstone social safety net programs have done more than anything to lift the elderly out of poverty.
David, thanks. Thanks for the comment. Gilger, you want to respond to David's thoughts?
I agree with what David has said. I think it's extremely important that we maintain these really important programs. I know that if they were cut back, it would impact people's sense of well-being, sense of security. It would actually invoke a lot of fear in the older population to not have as much as they have now. And people don't have a lot right now.
What do you think about the possibility, though, of giving more serious consideration, given that we do have a problem with funding entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, in particular Medicaid, of course, as well, about making them means tested so that there isn't the automatic benefit that there is now?
First of all, I wouldn't call them entitlement programs. They're not entitlement. I think we've all worked very hard during our lives to make sure that these programs exist, not just for ourselves, but for others. I think means testing is a bad idea in that people can get around, we know from taxes, they can get around anything in terms of actually reporting accurately what their true means are. I really think if it's not broken, don't mess with it in this case.
Although a lot of people would argue, Andrew Sharlock, that if it's not broken, it's pretty close to that breaking point.
Well, Medicare certainly is pretty close to that breaking point. Social Security is much farther away. While I agree with Gail, I think the success of these programs has been that we're all in it. Almost all of us are involved. It affects almost all of us. As soon as you make something means-tested, it becomes something about them rather than about us. Having said that, I think that there are those of us of any age who have much to give and don't always give our share. And there are those of us who are receiving benefits that we don't need as much. Yeah. And there are those of us who have the ability to help out in our communities, to help out with younger folks in our communities, help out in our schools, and just need the incentives and the opportunity to do that.
And back to our calls. Lorraine in San Mateo has our next observation. Lorraine, go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to respond to the younger gentleman who just previously spoke. And the only thing I'd like to say is just as a, you know, I feel badly for younger people who feel like this older cohort of elderly people, the baby boomers, are just, you know, sucking the younger people dry of, or that they feel they're going to have to support us. But having said that, we're, I think, a good starting point for whether you're old or whether you're young or whether you're in the middle is just to consider that we're all not the same in any given group. I've worked 44 years of my life. I've paid into Social Security. I know that it will supplement, meaning Social Security is a supplement. I don't expect younger people to support me. I've lived alone most of my life. I live in San Mateo. I do own my own home. And with the rights that I have, I try to also be responsible according to those rights. I would just like him to know that there are older people who have worked extremely hard to get to where they have. And after the financial debacle in 2008 and what we're going through now, it's a real struggle. It's a real struggle, and we're not all the same.
All right, Lorraine.
We don't all want to suck them dry.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for making that point and for joining into our program as well. Let's go ahead and get another caller on the line. Dan in Santa Rosa joins us next. Dan, go ahead, please.
Hello there. This is Dan in Santa Rosa, and thank you for taking my call. I was moved by the statement the male panelist made a few minutes ago. My personal query was already answered when you gave out the phone numbers, but I did have a question about SSI. I heard somebody say that they get upwards of $800 to $1,000. I just had my SSI reduced from $615 a month to $590. So am I barking up the wrong tree with SSI?
Dan, I don't know if we'll be able to get a specific enough response to that. SSI is the supplemental security income, different from Social Security incomes given to people with disabilities and who have meet certain specific criteria. Annie Chung, can you fill in any information, Dan, about what the state of SSI payments is at the
yes,
moment?
Yes, the payment has been reduced. And just like Social Security, there's been no cost of living adjustment, you know, for a couple of years. So elderly are getting less. But if you have other support, like family members paying for part of your household expense, then you would not get the full 900 plus SSI payment. Maybe that's maybe the circumstance of the caller.
Lots of one of the other responses in today's program that's gotten a lot of response, along with Tim's comment about his concerns about whether or not the baby boomers were going to sort of leave him dry, have been this question about how old is San Francisco. And I have sort of conflicting information in front of me. I'm not quite sure what to make it. In a top 10 list from U.S. News and World Report, the 10 cities with the oldest median age, San Francisco does not appear, but According to the 2005 American Community Survey, the median age for the U.S. household populations was 36. Among the nation's 15 largest cities, San Francisco had the highest median age. So maybe it's among the largest cities that San Francisco is indeed the oldest. Back to our calls. Rory in El Cerrito is next. Rory, go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Great panel. I just kind of wanted to segue, if I could, into, you know, really the importance of our aging communities as storytellers and educators. And specifically, if the panel could talk about resources in the Bay Area, like StageBridge in Oakland, that does theater works, not only for a set community, but they go out into the various neighborhoods and share performances and do education work.
Okay, Rory, thanks. Any other particular resources? We gave out the numbers for your organization, Self-Help for the Elderly and San Francisco Village earlier, but other resources out there that Rory thinks people ought to be more aware of. Annie Chung, any other additional suggestions that you would make?
We're in a city, San Francisco, that's actually very rich in elderly resources. There are a lot of really critical service providers. And if one would call the Department of Aging and Adult Services in the city, they actually work with a lot of us to provide services in many different languages and to many different cultures.
And Gilgary, any that you'd like to nominate, or is that part of what San Francisco Village does, is try to make that kind of networking possible?
Absolutely. We are affiliated with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. We're friends with the Fromm Institute. We're partners with the Transition Network, which is focused on women 50 plus. All of these organizations, oh, and also Coming of Age, which is a wonderful organization providing volunteer services. All of these organizations, including us, have a multitude of programs and services that address both the cultural, but more importantly, the educational issues that are related to aging.
Jim writes in our San Francisco neighborhood of Glen Park, I've noticed more and more gray hair, even as young families and singles also thrive. For us, it's the convenience of having stores, restaurants, BART, Muni, a beautiful park, all within walking distance. My parents, who retired to rural Plumas County, struggled as they aged because of limited walkable options and services. I'm happy to stay put. Chris writes in, to the person complaining about us baby boomers retiring on the backs of the young, I'd like to point out that the money I've learned in my lifetime has basically gone into raising my children. I could spend it on a retirement, but I actually decided to invest in their future. And a question from Alice, who writes in, you keep talking about SF. Here's another one about the oldest city in America. Have the guests talked about what portion of that statistic is because of the fact that all the families are leaving San Francisco and the Bay Area now because of how expensive it is to live there? It's an interesting point, Andrew Charlek, and it's actually a show we did earlier on this series that we're doing on the census, the problem that San Francisco is having with not exactly being family friendly.
Yeah. I grew up in San Francisco, so San Francisco is not the easiest place to raise kids, partly because of the economics. I think it's become, parts of it have become much more friendly for children, and we need to think about communities and building community centers that really provide resources and supports for people of all ages, and so that we can come together and help one another.
You know, it reminds me in a way, I lived in the Midwest for a number of years, and my old neighborhood in Madison, Wisconsin, was the sort of classic neighborhood where houses were close together, people knew each other, you could walk to the grocery store, walk to the library, walk to the hardware store half a block away from a bus stop. It's really that sense, isn't it, Annie Chung, that you need that sort of sense of interdependability and access?
Yes, and safe, right? In that environment, you will feel safe because you know your neighbors. You know if something happens to you, someone will take care of you. It's very important.
Barbara in Green Bay joins us. Not Green Bay. I'm thinking about Wisconsin. Sorry. Green Bray in Marin, I believe. Barbara, go ahead.
Hi. This is a very timely program. Thank you for having me. I'm involved in the Marin Village. We've started villages over here. The umbrella is Marin Village, and I'm involved in the Ross Valley Village. And we serve as a referral, you know, if you need to get to the hospital or all kinds of services, grocery shopping, social activities. And the person to contact would be Melanie Summers, and the number is 415-457-4633. Sausalito has been running for about a year, and plans are in place for one in the Dominican area, Larkspur, Corte Madera, Ross Valley. So its time has come, and I'm very excited you're doing this program.
Barbara, thanks. Sorry to jump in. We're just a tad short of time. I want to get in one other caller. But you wanted to mention as well, Gilgiri, that there's a conference coming up about the Village Movement?
Yes, it's the second annual National Village Gathering. As Andy said, there's 60 in existence, over 100 that are forming and in development. And it's actually going to be in Oakland this year, October 24th to the 26th. The first day is for people who are starting villages, but it's very exciting. And you can go on to the website. The V is v2vnetwork.org. Very exciting. And I think all of you who are interested in starting a village, this is the place to be.
And let's get in one more quick call. Carla, I'm afraid I'm going to keep you short on time, but a quick last observation, please.
Thank you for having me. And this is a wonderful program about town, and I think we should have more of these. As a younger person, I have a bachelor's in gerontology. I originally started with government, but I think we need to get more involved in that area. Unfortunately, someone has just said about the concept of interdependability, which is a very foreign concept still, because we don't have that, and we need to educate our communities in order to become a closer community. And I grew up in San Francisco. I love San Francisco, but I clearly see the deficits that we have, especially in treating our older population.
Carla, thanks. Yeah, no, thank you for that observation and that reminder. Quick last thought, just kind of 10 seconds from each of you about what we ought to be thinking about. Andrew Sharlock.
I think we need to think about including this conversation about aging into our lives, throughout our lives, including how we educate our young children, how we train professionals. We train social workers and doctors at Berkeley, but we need to increase this whole dialogue in all of our conversations as families and as societies.
Annie Chung.
We welcome volunteers, so please call Self-Help for the Elderly if you're interested. 677-7600.
In the 415 area code. And Gilgiri.
Yes, we also welcome volunteers. We also welcome people who are interested in joining, and I totally agree with Andy about having this conversation with our multi-generational families.
And you can find links to the websites of all of our guests' organizations if you go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment and you'll find your way to each of our guests' organizations. Thanks to Andrew Sharlock, Gilgiri, and Annie Chung for participating in our program. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory. Danny Bringer is our engineer, Dan Zoll, our senior editor, Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.